As I said when I was guiding the meditation, I wanted to share on equanimity this evening, and I was trying to look back to see what I shared on last time, and I couldn't find anything. And I said, well, my teachers have told me that the Dhamma is just, we all say the same thing over and over in a different way. So if you heard it before, here we go again, equanimity. but I was really inspired to share on equanimity because it's really been, it's been up for me in my life. I won't say that I've been actually, it's been a thought in my mind that, okay, equanimity practice would be good right now. To get there is a whole nother thing, but to know that it's there. And that's one of the things I love about the Dharma is that I really feel that for this particular, this practice offers me tools and guidance and ways to actually take action in some way. And even if I don't see the results of the action, or in my opinion, what I think the results should be, because part of the practice is to not be attached to the results or the outcomes, right? To let go of that expectation or even that control, but to trust that the intention of my practice or the intention of inclining the heart, mind, or my energy towards something could result in positive action or influence in my own life and the lives of others. And so, you know, the world right now to me is just, there's just a lot going on. I mean, when I was practicing with you just now, it was like eventually I came to, you know, can I open to my life, like all of my life, just as it is, with balance and ease, all of it, you know? And I was like, whoa, yeah, do I want to open to it all? But, you know, that arose for me, so I just said it. And for me, having phrases such as those, or, and you know, whatever works for you, when I don't know what to do and I feel like I can't do anything tangible, I'll practice like that, so that at least I am in, I there's something that I'm working towards, you know. And so equanimity has often been translated as balance, equipoise, and ease with what is. And also, you know, can be understood as a sense of balance and ease of mind, supported by wisdom and compassion. And I was thinking that when we were, when I was leading the meditation, that, you know, to be with what is one thing, but to keep the heart open with is another thing, and then to have wise understanding or wise view with the situation or the circumstances is a whole nother addition. So it's not done in isolation. And as it's having it, or equanimity is one of the four Brahma Viharas, right? We have the metta, loving kindness. We have karuna and compassion, appreciative joy or mudita, and then equanimity. Upekkha, or equanimity. And I always see it as a I feel like if I had a like a wheel with these spokes on it, kind of like a weather vane, that but if it turned, that there's always one up on the top, one on the bottom, and one to the side. So all of the Brahma Viharas work together and are always present, even if one is in the forefront. And I really think that compassion has to be there with equanimity. And so it's accepting life with love and with care and with compassion as opposed to indifference. And other translations include, you know, mental calmness, composure, evenness of temper, especially in a difficult situation. I find that to be very challenging. It's like, okay, I could be equanimous when things are good and things are calm and maybe things don't impact me directly, but when the situation gets difficult, I get right knocked right off my balance, you know. And then it's like, okay, can I come back to it, you know, even once I've gotten knocked off, you know. And then yeah, balance of forces or interests, or balance or counterbalancing something else. James Barras, one of my favorite teachers, along with Philip Moffitt, James Barras says in his awakening, or has said in his Awakening Joy course that I was supporting him with in as a tech support in May of 2022, he said equanimity was meeting life's ups and downs with centeredness and balance. And I liked that. You know, it's like just meeting life's up, meeting, not solving, not resolving, in my understanding, or the way I understood it and took it to mean, is that, can I even just meet life's understanding? Can I look up? Can I look at it? Can I see it? Can I face it? Life's ups and its downs with a sense of centeredness and balance, so that I'm not knocked off my balance. And so there are things that we have to be mindful of when we practice equanimity. Because for me, I know when, you know, if I to accept something sometimes means I have to shut down, or I start to feel like I shut down all of my feelings and stuff around it because I'm trying so hard to be with it and to protect myself from the difficulties of the situation. But the Buddha teaches us that there is a near and far enemy for all of the Brahmaviharas. And I think this is when I'll bring up my... Let me find my, give me one moment while I get this going. Thanks for your patience. Oops, I hope I didn't just lose. Did I lose the Zoom? Oh, good, I thought I shut you all down. Hang on. I know you can't hear me. Okay, there it is. So equanimity has a near enemy. All of the four Brahmaviharas have a near and far enemy. And with equanimity, it's indifference, or and the far enemy is hatred. So we want to be careful when we're practicing indifference, when we're practicing equanimity, I'm sorry, that we're not practicing indifference. So that when we're accepting what is, or we're meeting life's ups and downs just as it is, and we are looking at the situation and trying to keep our balance, that we don't lose heart and become indifferent and not care. And that's to me when the other four, or the other three rather, Brahmaviharas can support us with that. Still being kind and compassionate towards ourselves and others, and actually still being open to joy when life's ups and downs begin to knock us off our balance. And the far enemy of that, or the opposite of equanimity, or what can come up when we could benefit from an equanimity practice, is hatred or cruelty. And then loving kindness, since I have it here, you know, can the near enemy can be like sentimentality that kind of has an attached love. And then there's the opposite of that, which is ill will. And compassion can look like pity, or also cruelty can come in there. And then, of course, with sympathetic joy, are you really genuinely happy for someone else's happiness? Or is there a bit of hypocrisy or jealousy in the practice? Another way to that supports me in understanding equanimity is the serenity prayer. The serenity prayer that is often... used by people, or the people that run the Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that made it, the Alcoholics Anonymous has made the Serenity Prayer very popular, but I found that it was often used by a 20th century preacher and theologian, Reinhold Niebuhr. But before I knew any of that, my mom always had the Serenity Prayer on the wall. I didn't understand it then when I was growing up as much as I understand it now. And when I started practicing equanimity, actually the first time I heard about it, I was doing a day long at Spirit Rock. And it was my very first day long. And the topic was equanimity. I spent years trying to figure out what that meant. And it was before Google, so I couldn't do a Google search about it. And so when I, after, you know, practicing over the years and coming to understand it, I finally made a connection with the Serenity Prayer. And I said, oh, That's equanimity. To, you know, it's having the peace of mind and the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Can I meet it where it is? To accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. That to me is supports me in understanding equanimity in my everyday life outside of these, you know, the Buddhist translations or translations from, you know, the Pali language into English. But really, can I be at peace with the way things are? You know, not, I don't have to condone them. And again, I can keep my heart open and still feel into things and know that I cannot change them. And then the wisdom piece comes in when I realize that there is something sometimes that I can change. And then it takes courage to make that change if it's something I can change, or even to just influence the change, you know? And so we have to take, for me, that's when the meditation practice on equanimity supports me in contemplating and discerning these things. I might not get the answer right away. Like when I'm sitting there in the meditation practice, I'm just realizing like, oh, can I really open up to everything in my life with balance and ease right now, just as it is? I don't know. But as I sit in stillness and empowered silence, sometimes things arise and I realize that there are certain things that I can't change. Like there are people in my life sometimes that I want to support, or I want to help, or I want their circumstances to be different. That's a real hard one for me, especially people that I love, but just sometimes the world. I want to change the world, you know, and so I can't. I can't. And so can I accept that with balance, ease, compassion? Can I honor someone else's journey? And what is it that I can offer them so that they can go on about their life as best they can? And how can I keep my heart open towards them and also not beat myself up because I can't make a change for them? It's hard enough to change the things I want to change about myself, you know? When there is something I can change, like the way I live my life, can I have the courage to do so? And part of my life of living with the with my commitment to the Dharma, my commitment to practice and living as best I can with the Dharma and certain precepts as my guide in life, it really supports me in knowing that, you know, this is something that I can change. I can change the guides that I use for my life. I can change by leaning on certain principles that line up with my values and my life. And so I can only change me. But that also doesn't mean that things out there in the environment aren't going to come against me, or, you know, the eight worldly winds, for example, to come and knock me off my kilter, even though I've decided to live in this way. But that's kind of an example of, you know, really understanding what we can change and what we can't change, and to accept this life with as it is, with both wisdom and compassion, and keeping our hearts open so that we don't get into indifference and apathy or callousness. And so, basically, the Serenity Prayer is a helpful way to remember the principles in life, and in addition to it being used to support people in remembering the conditions of and principles of recovery. I feel like it can help me when I reflect on the Serenity Prayer as an equanimity practice. It can help me decide whether a situation is worth getting upset over or not, or if it's beyond my control, you know. And it's a great reminder for me that we are powerless over people, places, and things. Or it's a great reminder for me that I am powerless over people, places, and things. And so in the Dharma, what is Buddhism? I mean, when the Dhamma word is equanimity, and it's considered a sublime attitude that is neither a thought nor an emotion, but it is rather a steady, conscious realization of reality's transience. It is the ground for wisdom and freedom and the protector of compassion and love. And the American Buddhist monk Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote, "The real meaning of upekkha is equanimity, not indifference, in the sense of unconcern for others. As a spiritual virtue, upekkha means stability in the face of fluctuations of worldly fortune. It is evenness of mind, unshakable freedom of mind, a state of inner equipoise that cannot be upset by gain and loss, honor and dishonor, praise and blame, pleasure and pain," also known as the eight worldly winds in the Dharma. Upekkha is freedom from all points of self-reference. It is indifference only to the demands of the ego self, with its craving for pleasure and position, not to the well-being of one's own fellow human beings. True equanimity is the pinnacle of the four social attitudes that Buddhist texts call the divine abodes: boundless loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity. The last does not override and negate the preceding three, but perfects and consummates them. So to me, Bhikkhu Bodhi is speaking again to how all four of the Brahmaviharas work together and support equanimity, particularly in this way. And that equanimity can support us in facing the eight worldly winds, all of life, all that life throws at us. So something else that has supported me in understanding or helping to discern things I can change or things I can't change or things I have control of or things I don't have control of is this from another course that I took. I was like, whoa, this was great. So what is in my control? This is more on the mindfulness and psychology path. And I don't remember the at mindful enough is down there. That's the where I think you can find a copy. But what's in my control? This is just one example. My thoughts and my actions are in my control. What I give my energy to is in my control. The goals I set are in my control. How I speak to myself, how I spend my free time, how I handle challenges, and my boundaries. That's what's in control. That's what I can control somewhat, because from the Buddhist perspective, we know that, really, it's really hard to control all of those things too, trying to sit in meditation and control your thoughts and actions, but we control our actions. We can recognize our thinking and our thoughts as patterns, but if we act on those or not, that's where we have to apply the discernment. Things that are out of my control, hard for me. The outcome of my efforts. Because if I'm practicing equanimity, I want equanimity to show up right when I need it, and it doesn't. So the outcome of my efforts is out of my control. The future is out of my control. How others take care of themselves is out of my control. Whoa. What other people think of me is out of my control. What happens around me, the opinions of others, the past, and the actions of others. It's hard to know. It's hard to have that understanding. But can I even be with this with equanimity? So, but that's when the equanimity practice helps me and supports me in even inclining my heart mind towards the understanding that accepting things as they are, or at least if I can't accept them, being with things as they are and knowing that that is the truth, and how do I face the truth? That equanimity practice and the understanding of equanimity itself can support me when I'm hit with the eight worldly winds. You know, even if I get knocked off again, I say that because constantly getting knocked off, and equanimity doesn't always change. I have a react, or it's not an equanimous response. However, what the Dhamma shows me is that when that happens, maybe not in the moment, but sometime later in my practice, or I go home, or whatever it is, or I can just go, let's reflect on that situation. Can I make a change or not? If I can make the change, what's holding me back? Because sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm scared to make a change because that might cause a whole lot of stirring up or something. And if I can make a change, what is it? But really, can I be with what is? With compassion and wisdom, with balance and ease, with understanding, with heart. And, sometimes equanimity doesn't arise in those heated situations for me, or the difficult situations or the difficult things that happen in life in the world. However, I can go back to that embodied stillness practice, even in the moment. It's like, can I just reconnect to that anchor, that home base? When I'm feeling like the winds are getting ready to knock me around, can I imagine myself as a mountain? And can I at least just connect and feel my feet on the earth and pause and take a breath before I react? Can I keep my heart open and realize that maybe what's happening to me is not personal? And can I be kind to myself when my reaction is not equanimous? That's also difficult. Can I accept that? Can I accept the fact that I wasn't kind and equanimous? Can I even just accept that of myself? And that has, challenged my practice. And I really am a Viharas because I can at least go there if I can't figure out what's happening in life. I can go to these Brahma Viharas and at least see, is my heart still alive? Can joy still be cultivated? Can I feel love about anything? Can I care about what's happening? Can I just accept with wisdom and understanding that this is how it is and I cannot change it in this moment? And then perhaps, whether the situation changes or not, perhaps I can be with it differently. I can be with it differently, and I can go back and review. I keep that list. I actually have that thing. I keep it on my whiteboard here because I forget what I can control and what I can't control. I forget. And then I don't like what I can't control when I want to control it. And then I don't like to be controlled. It's a hot mess. So these reminders, the practice of equanimity is a big reminder to me that it's important to be connected in my life, to be connected to the earth, to be connected in the Dhamma practice, to understand and to create definitions and understandings of equanimity, for one example, that I can relate to, right? Like connecting it for me, like I said, connecting it to the serenity prayer, right? So if I can't remember the equanimity phrases and what Bhikkhu Bodhi said and whatever, it's like, oh, the serenity prayer comes to mind to me. Or maybe it's even just the earth. One other tidbit is that one of the times in my life when I felt like my life fell apart and I had nothing to stand on. And I said that to one of my teachers, Gina Sharp. I was like, I have nothing to stand on. Everything's falling apart. And she said, the Dhamma, The Dhamma is your foundation. Because that's what I said. I have no foundation. She said, the Dharma is your foundation. You are standing on the Dharma. And to me, that was like, the Dharma is itself is a whole practice of equanimity. And that has stuck with me for 10 years. When things fall apart, I'm like, okay, I'm standing on the Dhamma. So I shared some phrases with you, and I'm going to share a few more right here. That these have been, you know, I like to change phrases so that they make sense to me. I need to connect to them. I need to connect to the Dharma in a way that I can metabolize it so that it's real. And so these phrases you may have heard before, and I've just added a few things or changed them, and I can't say who I got them from, but I know I got them from some of the Western Dharma teachers that you've all been exposed to. So you may be able to tell me where some of them came from. But I like to say, may my, and you know, I've been told that with the practice of the Brahma Viharas, that our phrases should be, you know, pretty short and succinct, you know. But I developed these because they help me connect. And then I can shorten them once I know, you know, once I'm generating, you know, the feeling around it. So may my heart and mind open to this experience with balance and ease. I shared that in the meditation practice. Another one is, all beings have their own journey. May my heart and mind open to the expressions of their experience with balance and ease. And I think that I was practicing with Kamala Masters this spring, and I believe she had some influence over the all beings have their own journey. I could be wrong, but I think that's what I came out with. And I added, may my heart and mind open to the expressions of their experience with balance and ease. Because that goes back to what I can control, and I can't control how other people live their life and how they care for themselves. And it's like, it wasn't enough for me to just say all beings have their own journey. That kind of, with that, I was kind of leaning into callousness and, you know, apathy. But it's like, if I can say, can my heart and mind open to the expressions of their experience? You know, to me, that's like, okay, that supports me with keeping my heart open. Another one that's very similar. All beings have their own journey. May all beings open to all experience with balance and ease. So kind of asking if all beings can open to all experience with balance and ease. Again, I have no control. And then this one, I'm sure you've heard, if you've been on the Dhamma scene, whether I understand it or not, things are unfolding according to a lawful nature. And then again, I add, may my heart and mind open to this understanding with balance and ease. Because again, to me, it felt kind of cold-blooded to be like, whether I understand it or not, things are unfolding according to a lawful nature. And if I'm thinking about somebody or something that I love, it's kind of like I started to get kind of dismissive around that phrase. And so I had to add again, may my heart and mind open to this understanding with balance and ease. So I had to repeat, you know, saying, can my heart and mind open so as I'm accepting? So I'm not condoning, I'm remembering, maybe another way to say it, because I do get callous, I do get apathetic, I do get kind of like, because when things get to be too much, I shut down. So it helps me to remember or to ask, can I at least do my best to keep my heart and mind open to this understanding with balance and ease? So I'd love to, in your own, just taking a moment, if you'd like, to reflect on a few phrases that I have here, or a few prompts. Where does the need for equipoise currently exist in your life? Where does the need for equipoise currently exist in your life? Or write it down and maybe think about it later if you're interested. And we're not going to share, but just a personal reflection. Or another one to consider is, where might I apply the practice of upekkha equanimity in my life? Where might I apply the practice of upekkha equanimity in my life? Or what, if anything, will you explore to support yourself with equanimity in mind? What, if anything, will you explore to support yourself with upekkha or equanimity? Minutes. So I wrote up a little summary just to kind of wrap things up. And basically touching into the four Brahma Viharas or heart practices are like observing a garden, in my opinion. The seeds and seedlings or plants are already so loving kindness, compassion are already. Some of us have plants that are more mature than others. Some have qualities that seem to naturally grow more than others. And other qualities, others need more attention. It all depends on the conditions of each of these seeds, seedlings, or plants, or each of the Brahma Vihara. Perhaps metta is stronger in your life, or karuna. Or mudita is an area of where you can open your heart towards. Or it's upekkha, where you need to or would like to live your life with more balance and ease. Loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Again, these are qualities of heart that we all have. And I know for me, sometimes they felt like they were, certain ones felt dormant. Compassion was dormant for me for a long time, and I didn't even realize it. Until someone close to me passed away. And I realized it in its opposition. I realized it in the lack of compassion that existed in my behavior in that relationship. And I was like, oh, that's compassion not there. And it was a great awakening for me. Too late to tell the person alive, but could do some practice around it. And I also know what it feels like to be discompassionate. And I can act in more compassionate ways. So sometimes when the opposite comes up, sometimes if we're off balance, for example, when we're practicing equanimity and we are apathetic and we do, you know, not, we're not open to wisdom, we can learn from that as well. We can, the absence of the quality or the dormancy of the quality, and we can awaken it again. So each of our gardens already innately contain these heart qualities. So depending on the conditions these qualities of heart are impacted, they're impacted by, just as our practices with these qualities of heart depend on our ability to be open to exploring these possibilities and really creating our own understanding of the Brahma Viharas and the practices And we have to tend to them just like we, you know, some of the practice can be looked at as like sun, putting sunshine on our metta as we put, as the plants need sun to grow and they need a nutritious soil. And we have to pay attention to the garden in order for it to grow. And sometimes it takes time to recognize exactly what needs to be done. Sometimes perhaps we wait until the plant is no longer blooming or blossoming and it's just dirt in there, and you know you planted some bulbs. So even though you can only see the earth and the soil, can you continue to fertilize the soil? Can you water the soil? Can you make sure it's getting enough sun? Can you just care about it? And then let go of the expected outcome. And for example, sometimes some things, I feel like things chew away at me. And that happened to me this year with my tomato plants. My landlords gave me 2 tomato plants and I was really happy. I was like, oh, thank you, thank you. And the deer ate them. And then my neighbors across the street were offering up tomato plants because, you know, they had too many. So I planted 2 more tomato plants. And the mama deer and her fawns came back. They found a salad bar. That's not the only thing they ate. And so I took those plants out. And then my landlord's friends gave them to get extra tomato plants. So I had a 3rd set of tomato plants. And I put them in. I planted them. My daughter and I planted them there. The deer ate them again. Ate them down to, you know, like chopped them down. And I was like, okay, I'm just, that tells me that something's like this. But what I did, I was going to take them out and compost them. But suddenly I went away and I came back and it had leaves. And I said to my landlords, I said, did you guys give me another set of tomato plants? And they said, no. And I said, oh my goodness, look at these plants. I have 5 tomatoes growing on those plants right now. So it's so it's kind of like something's eating away, and you keep making an effort to cultivate this quality of heart. And you never know, the worst case scenario, you may just actually grow some fruit in your heart. That was a sidebar. That wasn't how I was going to wrap it up, but I think... I think I'll just leave it there. That don't give up on your garden. Don't give up on your heart qualities and the possibilities that, you know, if you continue to cultivate, continue to take care of yourself, continue to be gentle and kind to yourself, and to be open to the way things are. And letting go of the outcome and remembering what you can control and what you can't control, and keeping the possibility alive in your gardens, in your heart gardens. Yeah. I think that's really it. You know, with all that's happening in the world today and whatever's happening in your lives, because I know you're human beings just like me, that keep equanimity in mind. And see if that can support you in being with whatever is, just as it is, with balance, ease, and compassion for yourself and for the situation. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And may something I shared be of benefit to someone, somewhere.